out that Ford, about doing the Netflix series about the Ford and that coming up. It's kind of close to it. Netflix is doing like a similar kind of extended series on the Kennedys.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, damn it. You know, it's like, okay. And, you know, that, so, you know, by the time that gets done, people will be tired of those big historic
Kennedys,
dramas.
I feel like, are a more interesting family than Ford family.
Oh, by a mile. Yeah. By a mile. Oh, yeah. Just Joe Kennedy, you know, the mm-hmm. and all that.
The two Roberts.
Yeah.
Jay. His story is so crazy. I still can't believe the thing about him swimming like 20 miles and stuff during World War II.
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous.
He's
like got to be the most athletic president we've ever had. Like, I can't imagine any other president.
Gerald Ford.
No way.
It's what, a starter at Michigan? Football?
Okay. That doesn't compare to swimming 20 miles.
Some little swim. A little swim in the ocean. And this guy.
He was a zero handicap. He's a scratch golfer.
A scratch golfer, too? Okay. You keep proving yourself, you know? It's like, yeah. That,
no, I'm talking about John.
He wasn't a scratch golfer.
Yes, he was. He was amazing at golf.
A putt-putt?
Okay. You're just so mean. Like, yeah.
Cornhole golf? What?
Are we on air? Let's get this.
I mean, he was a good golfer.
This is prime time television.
Video of him golfing and like scores and stuff. And
AI generated. Okay. Well, yeah, come on. It's fake news. You know what?
If it's got Kennedy, it's a bad thing.
He was actually
a good golfer.
Go on TikTok. There's all kinds of like AI generated Kennedy stuff.
Oh my God.
It's hilarious. So
I've been watching this one.
Yeah.
There's this guy who he does these videos and I think he's like mentally ill.
Yeah.
And he'll like go into the back of like Walmarts and stuff and like, and they'll be like, sir, you can't be back here. Like, hey, sir, you got to go this way. And he'll like dub it over with AI voices.
Yeah.
And he always has like a picture of Robert Kennedy at the beginning. He'll be like, deliver raw milk to the Black African Coalition. Oh. He was the migrant tunnel camps. And it's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Watch.
See, I'm all messed up that they have, I'm getting all these ones like AI generated ones like Mr. Rogers.
Oh no.
And he's interviewing two Tupac, and he's like, how's that? And Tupac goes, what's that? He goes, how's that? And how's those nuts on your face? And it's like, what the hell? You know, and I got one after another.
And you're like.
That's
thumbs up.
And I didn't, but
next.
I didn't, but the algorithm sure thing knows how to feed it to me.
It's like, scary how those algorithms work, though, or it's like, they monitor your eyes. And like,
it has to, yeah, because like, you know.
No, like, this is perfect.
Pat Lynch is digging this.
Mm. Like, they look at your eyes, and they're like, oh, he's been watching for a really long time.
They have John F. Kennedy, like, at a rager doing, like, you know, doing the DJ and all.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, it's.
I like one. There's this game, Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege.
Yeah.
They'll like do AI voices where like they'll have the AI characters on screen doing the call outs. So it'll be like, it would be like Jenna Ortega giving call outs to like Robert Kennedy. And it's like, and then it's like Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. And he's like, he's on your left. He's on your left. And she's like, I got it. And he goes, sit down, kid. And it's God, it's going too far.
Oh, okay. Well, we going?
Yeah, we're going.
All right. Well, hello. Yeah, well, this thing was a crash. Yeah, the car crash or just went in the ditch and we're pulling it back out, but we'll get the show started. Hello, this is As the World Turns or Burns. This is Pat Lynch with
Brendan Connell, Professor Connell.
Professor Connell, and missing, but definitely missed, is Karen O'Keefe. We just can't get our schedules all, you know, we're all three of us are together. I guess that's the problem with being internet famous, right? When you launch a mega successful podcast, all of a sudden all these demands come up, you know, and so
it's a double-edged sword, right?
School.
We also just kind of got into like a scheduling hell here because there's like Wednesday's like the day that we record usually and or, you know, stuff like that. And that's a service day.
Yeah. And I got you know, work, and then I'm there opening art galleries and going to discotheques and all kinds of VIP events.
And the city of Batesville had the nerve to call me into jury duty a couple weeks ago.
So he's out there defending democracy. So we got all of that.
Are you legally allowed to talk about your jury duty?
Definitely not, but I didn't get called.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if you didn't get called.
I didn't actually get picked, but I had to show up and they were doing
the
screening.
Did they give you a reason, like, because you're a political science professor or like?
No, I actually I just never got my name called and didn't even get the chance to get interrogated or whatever the verb is you want to use. So yeah, they just didn't select me.
Okay. Well, Brendan, anywhere you want to start as far as, political talk?
Do we want to start with the Voting Rights Act and the issue of gerrymandering?
Yeah, fire away.
Well, it kind of takes us back to, what was it, the last podcast of the spring? Because I think we were talking about gerrymandering just generally, and I think that was maybe one of Kieran's actually...
wish list.
The wish list for what to fix if you're going to fix American politics to get rid of gerrymandering. Kind of interesting because the Voting Rights Act, though, is kind of mandating or allowing gerrymandering, but in a way that is supposed to give you some positive. So it's not gerrymandering for the purpose of political gains. The defense of this part of the Voting Rights Act is you're devising districts in a way to create a majority-minority district.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, knowledge of the history of this act is, you know, historically— our government is maybe still not that good at representing minorities.
Right.
And historically, it has looked very white, male skewed. That's the case whether you're talking about Congress or even the courts I taught about today in the American Experience class. Nevertheless, you know, one potential solution is you actually create these districts where you're guaranteed to get districts that black voters represent the majority, and so that gives them at least, you know, one seat in Louisiana or one seat in Mississippi, et cetera, in Congress, right?
You get John Lewis, you get Jim Clyburn, you know, Maxine Waters. Well, she's in California, so a little different story. But in those southern states where the Voting Rights Act actually was applied.
Yeah. Right. And so that's the benefit, the proposed benefit. I think that's why some people are if not angry, worried, because this is kind of what's being reviewed by the court right now, our Supreme Court. The other side of the story is this is gerrymandering, and it is actually kind of a discriminatory policy in the sense that you are drawing political institutions on the basis of race.
Right.
And that makes some people uncomfortable enough where some people say we shouldn't do this anymore in the year 2025. And we'll see what the courts say. I can probably predict what the courts are going to say.
Yeah, it's gone.
Is it like in rule that they can do it? Like if the courts say that it's not allowed, like they just, isn't there a law that says they can gerrymander? So are they just saying like, no more gerrymandering? Or like, how does that even work?
So there's a distinction between gerrymandering on the basis of, let's say, partisanship and gerrymandering on the basis of race. The courts for the time being have said that gerrymandering on the basis of partisanship is a political issue and they're not going to make a judgment off of it. It's more or less what they've decided. When you start getting into discrimination on the basis of race, though, whether it's drawing districts, whether it's hiring practices, whether it's admissions to colleges, right, whatever it is, when you start discriminating off of race, it's treated as qualitatively different as discriminating off of other things because of our nation's history. And you need, I'm not a lawyer, but just with non-lawyer speak, you need a really, really, really good reason to discriminate on the basis of race.
Right.
And if you don't have a really, really good reason, the courts will likely strike it down. And if we're going to predict the way the Supreme Court's going to go, just based off of their ruling from two summers ago, where they basically got rid of, you know, the admissions policies and allowing, you know, better representation of students coming in on the basis of race, they're probably going to strike this down as well.
Yeah, and it's kind of their way of saying that racism is not a big deal anymore. And, you know, well, that could be a whole talk show, you know, they're just saying, this isn't, you know, the Voting Rights Act, goodness, is 60 years old mm-hmm. now. So, so now everything's, you know, everything's fine. You know, we're all colorblind and, you know, and we know the reality, it won't be that at all. Now, the thing with the Voting Rights Act also is it kind of just slowed the partisan gerrymandering to a degree, because, you know, they were very cognizant that you know, black support and Hispanic support tended to lean more Democrat. So, but if they created the partisan maps, and all of a sudden it takes away all equal representation. Now they're subject to a suit. If you just say that, yeah, you just can't use race anymore, well, then they'll just, everything will be all based on political affiliation. Mm-hmm. And now the gates will open, and you've probably seen it. I've seen it that, you know, like the maps of what the Deep South, or just the Southeast, you know, from the Carolinas on down to Louisiana, when they redistrict, basically it's just, it'll be completely Republican at that point. Yeah. The way the timing is, even if the Supreme Court rules and just, you know, where the primaries are, it's kind of questionable if this all could be implemented by 2026, mm. 2028, definitely. And if 2028 arrives, what they're saying is that, you know, in order to counter something like this, overall for the popular vote for Democrats, for all 50 states, they need like a 5-6% margin, like something significant, mm-hmm. where, you know, you've seen all the elections been relatively close. There's going to have to be some amazing surge everywhere, you know, to counteract all the anticipated changes in the Southeast. I mean, this kind of stuff's seismic, you know, in terms of changes in this country, you know, which, you know, gets me to this, you know, Jason and I were talking about this, Brendan, that, you know, there's always partisanship, but it's now, you know, with the Trump administration, it's so clearly defined that he is there to serve his interest and Republican interest. This isn't George Bush, I'm a uniter, not a divider. You know, this isn't, you know, any other Republican before, even Nixon was, it was somebody that was bipartisan in a number of things. This is winner takes all, you know, and loser, you know, they're going to, the loser is going to suffer. And it's just, it's a, you know, and we're only 9 months into this thing. I don't know where, you know, this, you know, when you take it out, where it could go. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot bigger than just gerrymandering, right?
Yeah.
It's just the, that's been an important norm, is the president is, they're supposed to kind of be a tough person sometimes and pressure Congress to do things, right? Like every president to some extent has wanted to push past legislation, and sometimes you gotta, you know, kind of maybe take sides or try to, you're, you know, not all presidents are going to be totally, you know, nonpartisan or unbiased, but to some extent, the president has to be a unifier. They are not just the head of government. They're supposed to be the head of state, very similar to the Queen or King of England.
Right.
They are supposed to symbolically represent all Americans, right? They are the commander in chief. They're the leader of the free world. And this presidency, Trump is not a unifier. He's, if anything, the opposite.
Yeah.
He's dug into his views. He's pushing what he wants, what the party wants. And he doesn't seem very willing to compromise. I mean, one reason why we're probably in a government shutdown right now. So, going back to the gerrymandering issue or the Voting Rights Act, we can talk about maybe like what is the right thing to do here.
Right.
And I actually will probably differ in my opinion on this than maybe than maybe you will. But what I can say is that the problem here is you've got people on both sides that probably don't care at all about representation of minorities. They really just want more seats in Congress, yeah, like you said, right? Fair enough. Republicans are really hoping that this gets overturned because regardless of how this affects representation, it's going to give them more seats in right. the House, and it's going to just totally kind of flip the balance. Right, Democrats, same thing. They know what's at stake. If this goes away, they're going to lose seats. It's going to make it that much harder to kind of reclaim seats in the House. So that is kind of the problem. And I kind of actually see a defense of why you might want to get rid of this portion of the Voting Rights Act. But my position would differ greatly from some of the stuff that's been said in the news from the right.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's just that, you know, having it is just caught a firewall from just that complete radical gerrymandering that's going on now, because it's, you know, Texas, give me 5 seats, done. Indiana, I need a seat. Well, we're working on it. Mm-hmm. North Carolina, I need a seat. Okay. Now, if you don't have that speed bump with the voting, that Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, you know, just hello, Southeast, you know, let's go and just complete the deal. And it also, it really does, it brings out all the worst instincts, because California, you know, Newsom wanted to, you know, he obviously wants his profile up and he wants to be the clear contender, the leading contender against Trump in 28. And California actually passed what we all want, you know, what we talked about. They have a commission mm-hmm. to district. I mean, they have the perfect solution, and they're now voting to mm-hmm. overlook that until 2030. And, you know, and it's all because now it's like they go low and forget Michelle Obama's, we go high. We're going to go low, maybe lower. It's then all you got is full contact, you know, sport.
And that's why it's got to be a federal solution, in my opinion, because it's not something that'll happen naturally with states doing it piecemeal. Because you're right. It's like, we already know what the solution is. You get some sort of independent commission. You could take gerrymandering totally out of the equation, but it's just not in the self-interest of parties. And to the extent that some Democratic states have started to do this, Republicans are not. And so Republicans that are winning seats, like, what are you going to do if you're the Democratic Party? Right. It's like, well, we have to do the same thing. And so it's going to have to be something federal that forces all, you know, states to kind of get rid of this process of having states write up their own political institutions, their own election rules, and creating these safe seats.
But you kind of laid it out, though. How can it possibly happen? Because each side only wants it, the rules changed to their advantage, and you can't have like a win-win in their mind, at least, with that. Everybody's going to see it as a win-lose.
And therein lies why I would not hold my breath. I don't think this is going to – I don't think there's anything that will come out of Congress that deals with this anytime soon, especially since Congress is controlled by the Republicans right now. And that leaves the courts could deal with this. But again, the courts for the time being have not really done anything about this, and they've been okay with it. They've been silent on it. So it's, you know, one of those things is going to have to change. You're going to have to get a Congress that magically they could pass federal legislation that gets rid of this. Or you get, you know, at least 5 Supreme Court justices that get an opportunity to strike down not just racial gerrymandering, but gerrymandering in general. One more thing I'll point out too is the distinction between political gerrymandering or partisan gerrymandering versus racial gerrymandering is like splitting hairs because, you know,
it's the same.
So, that's another thing that.
Yeah, no, the racial gerrymandering was just to get minority representation in the House, you know, that that it, you know, if you allow it just through partisan ways, that you could cleverly just disperse it so that there'd never be a chance for a minority representative to win a district. So they just tried to stack the deck. And so it's kind of kind of a awkward or hard-handed way to try to achieve a noble goal.
Mm-hmm.
And and yeah, just like affirmative action and some of these other things, you know, kind of the intent was good. Many times the implementation was problematic and eventually didn't hold up, and it all kind of collapsed and went away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of sad. Dramatic change of subject. Are you cool with us blowing up boats off of Venezuela? It's great TV.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, I like watching like buildings get blown up, and then it's like, oh, here's another one, you know, and you see that, you know, that little pencil boat kind of cruising the waters, and then it's like blammo, you know. It needs some of the Batman stuff, you know, but what in the world?
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably not a great idea. I mean, you're talking to someone who's kind of a pacifist, so I generally am reluctant to start getting into violent conflicts with foreign nations. They're very easy to start, and they're very easy to get into, but even something that starts small can very quickly grow into something bigger than you can control.
But what's the strategery? You know, that like, because you know, this isn't about drug trafficking. Because everything I read, drugs are, you know, the pathways for drugs actually to enter the U.S. is not some of these little teeny boats, you know, coming in through the Caribbean. So they're doing it for other reasons. You know, is it regime change or what, you know, what's the bigger picture or the long-term plan?
I don't know if I have the answer. Maybe it is something like we want to see Maduro gone, but it might be as simple as just we want to signal to that regime that we're serious about cracking down on narco terrorism and these other things that probably have connections to the government of Venezuela. I'm not too sure. To be honest, I've other than just seeing that ships have been blown up by the U.S., it's something I have not tuned into as much this week because I've been so busy with other things, but it is potentially worrying.
Well, they're talking some, you know, boots on the ground too, or CIA, you know, covert ops and
maybe something covert, but I don't see this administration sending boots on the ground short of if we're like attacked first or something because Trump already doesn't have enough support to do that. And like his base is pretty isolationist. I don't think they want to get too involved in any foreign conflict. I mean, especially Venezuela. I mean, it's how many Americans can point out when Venezuela is on a map? It's not considered to be.
Well, you just had a geography course.
Oh, yeah. I could actually tell you the statistics. It turns out 9 out of 12 students can get it right, but the other 3, maybe not so much. Yeah.
I mean, maybe Maduro just didn't go along with calling it the Gulf of America, and he wanted to stick with the Gulf of Mexico.
Maybe.
It was time to, we got to show him who's who.
Maybe. But it does seem like there's other stuff that is kind of burning more hot right now. You got the war in Ukraine still. You got what's going on in Gaza, which I know there was the ceasefire, and they released the hostages, which is great. But my understanding is the ceasefire is like now very shaky because I think Israel started blowing some stuff up. So I just think there's so much already on Trump's plate foreign policy-wise.
How is it that he became the foreign policy president? This was all America first.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you only have an attention span of so much, and it's all foreign affairs with him.
Let me think about that. I don't know if that's unique to Trump, but he is kind of... I mean, the Nobel Peace Prize, right? He's kind of like the negotiator.
Yeah. I ended 7 wars.
Yeah.
Even tariffs, really, it's economic not the
policy, yeah.
But it's economic policy, facing outward to, affect, all the international trade. It's not that, I mean, domestic economic policy has that drug proposal. So that's maybe one.
The Big Beautiful Bill we had.
So solidifying the tax structure mm-hmm. and everything.
The White House UFC card is considered an important domestic
indeed.
Policy.
Yeah, and the big ballroom that
the big ballroom. Yeah, yep, that yep.
you know the bill. But I guess you know his big thing is let's just go send you know troops mm-hmm. into Democrat cities. So I guess that's his America first.
Yeah, I just think he's been active everywhere. Foreign policy or domestic policy, and he has clearly shown that he is willing to stretch the boundaries of the Constitution and then some.
Speaking of stretching the boundaries, George Santos, he wasn't in your the district that you came from in New York, was he? Because he's Long Island or
Long Island's broken up though into multiple districts, so yeah, he wasn't where I lived, but
okay,
yeah.
I mean. What? You know, he was treated badly in prison, and let's not let him. You know, the thing is, you know, lying. Yeah, you don't go to prison for lying, but he flat out stole in hundreds of thousands of dollars, and nothing is said about that. You know, he's where is George Santos going to end up? I can't see him as a Fox News contributor, but podcast. Okay.
He's gonna start a crypto scam. What better way for somebody to scam,
man.
You know, this already notorious person who's robbed and stolen money before.
Oh well. Yeah. He basically
rug pull, classic little rug pull.
Yeah. When you got the integrity quiz for a crypto bro, you know, George Santos is whoa, yeah, it's like, oh goodness, you know, because it's like where I when I was my district in when I was in Georgia, thank goodness Marjorie Taylor Greene was further north, mm-hmm. but her with her ex-husband, her construction company where their office was literally 4 miles from my house, so. We may have been in the same Kroger at one time. You know,
like, well, do you even go to those offices?
That's interesting. So, like, what's going on with Marjorie Taylor Greene's character arc?
I don't know.
Because she seems to have jumped ship.
Well,
which is the last person I would have thought.
Okay. Yeah. Since
is she finally done wearing MAGA hats to the House of Reps?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, what do they say? Is it the youngins that spill the tea? Is that?
Is that a Gen Z phrase?
6'7"? I don't know.
I keep notes deets, on this. So.
The deets? I saw a thing from CNN.
You want the deets? Okay.
Yeah, I saw a thing from CNN that said that Gen Z slang is a cancer.
Okay. Yeah. And, well, every
CNN
time I...
CNN said that?
Yeah.
I go
that's
in.
Fake news.
I go in and I just fail miserably. But some of the Georgia things, Marjorie Taylor Greene badly wanted to run for Senate against Ossoff. Mm. And the party shut her down.
Oh.
And so now she's just kind of acting up and kind of being more of an independent.
Right,
I was, you know, I went along, you know, I got rid of McCarthy. I was one of Trump's biggest supporters. You know, I was, you know, I towed the line. And then when I think it's my turn to move up to that next notch, they shot me down. Mm. And they don't, you know, the candidates that are up against Ossoff aren't that all that particular. They're the small county guys that came up through state, you know, the state capitol and been kind of no name Congress people. Mm-hmm. So it's not that she had any real significant competition because the governor was thinking of it, but he passed too, I think, because he's just fed up with the whole
it honestly thing. Though if you think about it, like in the grand scheme of things, it does make the most sense that she would jump ship, right? Because like her whole personality is that she just like, and I hate to use the term like just meat rides, but she just absolutely hops on whatever's the most dominant thing for her, right, that her people want. she doesn't really have, like, I feel like she doesn't have her own, you know, base, right? Like, she doesn't have something that she's known for other than being, like, a crazy far-right conservative, right? So it's like, well, my people want this thing, so I'm just going to go full-blown into that thing. And it's like, now I need to, like, jump ship. I'm going to do whatever I can to get power, right? It just, it seems very in character to me. I don't know.
In the podcast I hear, what she's voicing is what a lot of, you know, kind of the real, like, there's a big segment of the Trump supporters that feel the same way. It's like, why are you giving $20 billion to Argentina to prop that up? You know, it's like, you know, is that America first? Why are you, you know, going and bombing Iran and doing all the this internet? Is that America first?
And that's what I mean by the whole, Trump can't go as far as you think he can in foreign policy on these things.
Right.
Like, I don't think we'll see boots on the ground for that reason.
Right.
Because
right.
it's already, you know, why are we giving money to Israel? This was the same thing for Ukraine, even like foreign aid and weapons to Ukraine.
Yeah.
That isolationist element is like one of the things that has just stuck around since Iraq War, Afghanistan War.
Yeah,
it's not gone away.
And it's, but you know, he wants to go off to this global summit and that global summit and be the deal maker around the world.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that thing with Argentina just blows my mind because. It's still so murky why, of all the countries, you know, to intervene and do this big economic bailout. And then it's classic, you know, Trump administration where this $20 billion involves like a number of big banks in New York, and they're working real hard, and it's almost sure some backroom deals being done that where they're going to be guaranteed that they won't lose a cent because you're about as far as in the IMF and investing in the economies of troubled countries that chances a lot of time that money just goes down the drain for a variety of reasons so here's a. It's an entirely upside deal for the banks.
Yeah,
they won't lose they won't lose a thing, and if it works, great. You know, we make even more as far as a return back. It's like, oh man,
that's a story that's played out so many times too. You know, you mentioned the International Monetary Fund, but you could say the same about just American foreign aid. I mean. The IMF, because we actually control the IMF to the extent that we've got the most voting influence at that institution, if you look at where it loans money out, it's always going to our allies, however defined.
Mm-hmm.
We will give them more money. We will give them less onerous conditions because when the IMF gives money out, there's always strings attached. And we'll also be more lenient. We'll keep giving money to our friends, even if they're not fulfilling those conditions.
Right.
And this is actually one reason why the IMF is now deemed to be like the bad guy in international relations, because it is not viewed as this impartial global institution. It's almost like a pawn of the United States.
Yeah.
The IMF gave so much money to Greece. They gave so much money to a lot of those like economies in the periphery of Europe during the Eurozone crisis.
Yeah.
And then we gave like barely any money to the Asian countries in the 1997 Asian financial crisis. So it's like, why did Thailand and South Korea barely get any money, but we gave all the money to Greece?
Yeah.
Well, Thailand and South Korea weren't as important to the U.S. financial center as, let's say, those EU countries, right? Or, you know, Germany was much more reliant on Greece not going under. They didn't really care too much about what was going on in South Asia. So... that's still playing out today. It's like you can kind of trace and see like who's getting American foreign aid or who's getting these like bank bailouts or guarantees. It's whoever has connections to New York City. So
And it's just same what's the IMF's involvement in at the Middle East? They seem to be so flush with cash, so there's nothing really to for them to do there?
They've been involved in some of those countries, but yeah. You're right. It's like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the UAE, they don't need to borrow from the IMF because they have all this oil revenue. So, and funny enough, too, actually, a lot of those countries in Asia, and this includes South Korea and Thailand, the Philippines, they've actually devalued their currency since then so that they export a lot.
Right.
And then they basically save up all that export revenue and put it in a rainy day fund so that they ever get another crisis, they don't have to go to the IMF.
Right.
They just go to that rainy day fund.
Love it.
So some countries have ways of trying to avoid the IMF.
Right.
And another thing you could do too is you could just borrow from China, which is also very different.
That's a big strat.
Yeah. So China,
especially for Africa.
China's stepped in where, you know, countries don't want to borrow from the IMF. Sometimes China comes and lends money, and that's
been don't want to deal with the United States at all anymore either. Like they just are done.
Too.
Just especially like Africa. China's like, hey, you know what? Help you build up your infrastructure.
Yeah. I always get it wrong. Is it the Belt and Road Initiative?
Belt and Road Initiative. Yeah.
And that's, that's in China, and Africa's really, they've built real strong ties with China.
Latin America, too. So that would include Venezuela.
Yeah.
That would include Ecuador. But fittingly enough, Argentina is a country that, at least since the Macri presidency, which is, when was that, 2015 or something, they've kind of swung back to the U.S. and they're more kind of pro-markets and capitalist and less China. So,
all right. Another dramatic change of subject, World Series.
World Series. Okay, you're talking to someone that has not watched a game of baseball since the year 2001 when I was heartbroken and the Yankees lost to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and that was the year of 9/11, too.
Right, right.
Jeez, and what a year for New York.
I just never watched baseball again. But I do know it's the Blue Jays and the Dodgers.
Yes.
Okay.
Pat was saying earlier that it's a matter of
how many games.
Yeah, how many games the Dodgers win it.
Well, okay, Jason, make a call. How many...
I think five. I think like you go the Shannon Sharpe route, although the guy's not a good guy. I think he's got a smart strategy of always playing the number five in 7-game playoff series. The other team's bound to win at least one out of 5 games, right? So, but it only takes 4 to win. I think the Dodgers are going to win in 5 games.
Okay, but I use the Price is Right strategy, so now I can go high or low, you know? So I got you position. All right, I'm going to go. I was going to say sweep, but that's taking too much. But I'm going to go 2, so 4-2. Oh,
so you're going to go 6 games?
Six games.
See, I don't know, because like the other thing. Actually, I'll let you go first. Sorry.
Well, question. So, how does the format work with home and away games? Is it?
I don't remember. I think they alternate every year. They alternate. It's like in the NFL, it's like home team jerseys, they alternate. But in this situation, it's just whoever gets to play at home.
I think it's 2-3-2.
2-3-2, okay.
So it's 2-2, so it's just like the NBA. You get two at home, then it's 2 away, and then it's another one at home, then another one away, and then it's another one at home, if you go first.
Yeah.
That's like hockey. 2-2-1-1-1.
Yeah, that's...
But that's also how the NBA works.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not baseball.
Well,
baseball, he just said 2-3-2.
Yeah, I thought it was you got 3 straight at home.
Oh, really? No, I thought it was 2.
Okay.
I thought it was like basketball and hockey.
Okay.
I think the playoff format for those 3 sports is kind of like just fully intertwined together.
Got it. Yeah, so 2-2-1-1-1. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Fair enough.
And also, you know, since, you know, we received a lot of calls and emails about my prediction about the Lions going undefeated for their remainder of the year. I'm revising my prediction that they will go undefeated as of this point. I was right. I just wasn't right at the right time.
You have to play the Vikings twice.
As I said, you know, as I clearly stated, they will go undefeated from this point in time. So, McCarthy.
Who's left for the Lions schedule that actually, like, the Lions just, like, it could be a good game? Is the Ravens are gone. Also, you guys played the Ravens already.
Yeah.
I guess you have to play the Packers again.
Yeah, on Thanksgiving.
Okay. Oh, on Thanksgiving.
Oh, that'd be a good game. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you have to play the Vikings on Christmas.
Yeah.
And you have to.
So those like, that those are two presents. You know, those are events, holidays
yeah,
of giving.
Two presents. Yeah. Okay. Well, do you guys play the Seahawks, right? At some point.
Who are
we
they?
We play the Seahawks.
Where they come from? See the Seahawks. Seattle. Oh, where they make coffee and things like that? Yeah, and Microsoft. Okay, got it.
But here's just a bunch of lumberjacks up there.
Yeah.
Oh, Aberdeen, you watched that episode?
No.
Oh,
I just know.
Oh, God. You gotta watch that episode.
Oh.
Yeah, we can't get into it. It's way too much here. But
we were doing a economics podcast with Raddick and Jason and Raddick started showing me the darkness that's in their souls, you know, and they brought
it.
And there's a guy who writes this Substack article that's real enlightening stuff. Like what he was young and watched his parents get murdered or something.
No. It's like Raddick's into this. Aberdeen is the Southwest. Okay, we're getting into
Aberdeen, Washington.
Aberdeen, Washington is the Southwest. Or the South, the deep South of the Northwest. And like the article, his premier article, his most popular article is called "When I Was 14 Years Old, I Watched My Teacher Die in Front of Me."
That's.
And that's the first line of the sentence. And it just gets worse. Like you would think like, holy crap, that's insane.
That's the typical Seahawks fan. Is that what
but,
you're
yeah.
saying?
Yeah, he's got
but
that.
See, okay, no, but hold on, we can't say that because I have a lot of family from Seattle, and they are Seahawks fans.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. there's more evidence.
Yeah, it is.
But that's
it all is starting to come together.
That's a sneaky deep South part of the United States, actually.
Well,
Now that I think about it, I
think of my grandpa. Like, he's a lumberjack, and he's crazy. Yeah.
A while ago, I was sharing a beer with someone in Bend, Oregon, and they told me, I don't know if this is true, but Oregon is like the spot where it's like, there's a spot on the map in like the middle of Oregon that is like the furthest you could ever be from like a paved road. It's actually in Oregon, he told me.
That's
now, it sounds
cool.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the continental U.S. because Alaska's got to be. But yeah, like then you drive through Oregon, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
But man, it's remote. And where it's remote, there's going to be some interesting far-right radical groups that are hiding
the
in the bushes.
My grandpa, right? Like my grandpa, he lives near Seattle. He lives in this little town. And he's a lumberjack. But he's not like a lumberjack where he like cuts. He goes and climbs trees and actually like takes them down. He's like 65 years old. He uses hardly any equipment other than
ropes.
That's cool. And like, he's a deep South. But see, like you would also think like because it's kind of like deep South-ish, like a lot of those like deep South areas of the Northwest would be like really radical, but they're not. Like my grandpa's really progressive. Yeah. So it's like, they're like if the South was progressive.
Yeah. Now,
yeah, I think
Kurt Cobain was from Aberdeen.
My grandpa, where he lives, he lives out in the middle of nowhere, but like where he lives is like at where Kurt Cobain grew up. It's like only not even a couple miles. Very, very close.
Yeah.
Like you can go to his house within like a 10-minute drive from where my grandpa lives. But it's like really, it's really interesting. It's really weird part of the United States because like it never gets talked about ever. Just how interesting the people are up there, but they're an interesting group. No.
Yeah.
But yeah, Seahawks. I think we play the Seahawks. I know that the Vikings do, so I think we're gonna lose that game to be honest. It's just
It's okay. They'll have
I hope that we get a Super Bowl Lions Patriots and then we can do a live stream.
Oh,
and
it's on a
game cast we can.
Oh yeah, we could.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be
but
fun.
We don't have to do that if it's just the Lions and the Patriots.
Hey, let's do it. Yeah.
But that's your guys' teams. Fun. Oh,
that would
be
more fun. We'd probably be yelling at each other.
I don't know if we want to put Pat on camera watching the Lions the very first time at the Super Bowl. Because if it would be the Lions' first ever Super Bowl,
I'm as chill as chill can be.
I imagine there are
sarcastic comment or two, but you know, that's about.
Although
I'll tell you,
they're good. Yeah,
here's the truth. I'm going to give you some truth right now. The fix is in. The NFL, Goodell, New York, they're ready on the phone. Anytime the Lions do a trick play, they call they make up some rule that they can't do it. You know, they score a touchdown on the Chiefs, New York. Hey, okay, you know, cancel that thing. You know, they're out to derail the lions.
So there's a script. You're saying.
There's a script.
And you know what's the lions, funny about that? That play that happened against the Chiefs, the Vikings did a trick play this week against the Eagles, and they made sure when they ran the play, Kevin O'Connell was saying when they ran the play, the one thing he told in Carson Wentz's ear was get set.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened with him, and so they didn't want a lion situation. So
yeah,
it's kind of interesting, but it is kind of a dumb rule. Like I don't like. It's because like it's such an obscure rule because if you go from under center, but it doesn't even have to be the quarterback. If anybody goes under center and they go out to motion, they have to be like fully set to be declared a runner or like something like that. And it's like, I don't know. Regardless, I think it should just be taken out of the game.
No, the fix has been in for a while. They're trying to keep the lines down.
Just wait until like all of a sudden they hit you with like the, oh, you can't actually have a kicker who doesn't have toes. Yeah, you guys are done.
You know, and what?
That's a real rule, by the way.
Was that from Dempsey back? Yeah.
You can't have square footed shoes anymore. Yeah. So people who don't have toes can't.
Yeah, and that was the New Orleans guy who kicked a record against who?
Against the Packers.
Wow.
No.
Yes, it was.
It was the Lions.
No way.
Lions.
What? I thought it was the Packers.
Lions.
I thought it was a game winner against the Packers.
No, I think it was the Lions in the Silverdome.
Yeah.
No, I think it's the Lions in the Silverdome, Jake, because it was indoors.
That's kind of cool. Yeah, it was like 63, and it was like the farthest before that was like 51 or 52, and these out here just kick 60 yards.
They're and like, it was nope. Like, how much did he make it by? A half a foot. Oh, that joke landed. Just let him, like, all my humor. Like, okay, but
question. Why do you think the Patriots are sneaky good? Do you think they finally just found Tom Brady too? Like, is Drake May just actually?
No. And trust me, 4 weeks is going to go by. The Patriots are going to lose one of those games, and people will stop talking about him. I cannot stand people that
good.
Talk sports.
He does look like a good quarterback.
I think he's a great quarterback. I don't think he's Tom Brady, and that's fine. He doesn't need to be Tom Brady. I hate it so much. Yeah. Everyone's just he's not Tom Brady. He's going
to
be the next Tom Brady.
I saw all these memes. It's like, it only took the Patriots 4 years to find their next franchise Tom Brady, and it's like.
No, he could be a franchise quarterback. I do think he's that good, but it's Tom Brady, man.
Yeah.
He's one of a kind.
He doesn't have obscure tuck rules to help him.
Deflating. Deflating balls.
It was going
winners
forward.
Winners win.
It was going
that's
forward.
Yeah, but he's no Jared Goff. That's clear.
Actually, I got a stick of deodorant with Jared Goff on it. I didn't even realize he was on it.
What?
Called, it's like something like Goff the Chain is what it's called. It's like an old spice. It's like an Old Spice, and it's like signed by Jared Goff. And I didn't even realize it. I just grabbed an Old Spice off the counter.
50% of the time, it works every time.
Ooh, that smells like gasoline.
I'm not gonna lie.
Let him cook. Oh, it's a gas fire.
Well, I think this has gone enough off the rails, and we're gonna wrap this. Good, Brendan. Thank you. Of course, this was a good one. Karen, we miss you. We're gonna get the band back together full steam, and but you know, nevertheless, as the world turns or burns, moves on, and so we will we'll catch up with you again next would that be another 2 weeks, and we just thank you for listening, for watching us on YouTube, and any parting words, Jason, before we go?
Goodbye.
Wow.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. That's the American way of saying it.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Setting our own trends, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
We do things differently around here.
Okay. Well, Brendan and I eat freedom fries, Jason, so...
I was going to say, the only thing red is my blood.
Well, with that, I'll say... goodbye.
Bye. Oh, I'll say Georgian. Nachvamdis.
There you go. All right, yeah. You're going...
This won't be until Christmas time.
Christmas, but yeah.
Yeah. I'll report back. We'll have a special podcast. I'll bring back some Soviet memorabilia.
Bring back some recipes on how to make some Georgian food.
Oh, yeah. Khimkali and Khachapuri. Right. Yeah.
Excellent. Cool. All right. Well, take care. Bye.
This podcast is sponsored in part by Lion College and Kilt Studios. Thank you to Jonah Winter for the intro and outro music.